parenting on Moncrief, thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. If you'd like to win a trip, though, to South Africa, specifically if you'd like to win a trip to Cape Town to see Table Mountain, I'd like to stay for 5 nights at the President Hotel in Cape Town, what we would like you to do is to text the word priceless to 50300. That will cost you €2. At least 180 of that will go towards the St Vincent de Paul, plus MasterCard, who are running this priceless competition, will donate 5 school meals to hungry children through the World Food Programme. So text the word priceless to 50300. You can go to newstalk.com/feedingtheirfuture to find out more information. David Carey joins us once again. Good afternoon, David.
Hello, Sean.
Are you well?
I'm in top form, Sean.
I'm glad to hear that. Can you ask how best to handle a defiant, almost 6-year-old daughter? She is in a phase of not listening or delaying doing what I ask her. For example, getting ready for bed, dressed for school or tidying up. As soon as her father asks, she says yes, sweetly, or hops to do what I've asked. If he suddenly shows up, it's very frustrating. What can I do to improve her compliance with me?
Parents, your job is to take control. You're in charge. Stay in charge. Be firm. Take no enemies. Dad, you've got to firmly tell this little 6-year-old girl she is to behave and respond to mommy exactly as she behaves and responds to you. No exceptions ever. Mm. Mom, you've got to win these battles. Now, there is a trick you could use. Maybe it will work, maybe it won't. It's called choices, and choices go like this. Would you like to brush your teeth and then get into your jammies? Or would you prefer to get into your jammies and brush your teeth? That gives the 6-year-old a choice. It eliminates the tendency for a child who is highly oppositional to oppose you, but it doesn't always work. Mm. So experiment with these things. But I want to emphasize, this little girl is 6 years of age. You are big parents. Take control of your child now, or you lose the battle for years to come. None of this is funny. None of it is amusing. Mom, you've got to assert your rights as the parent. Dad, you have to stand up for mom. Dad, you talk to daughter first, and then let her know mommy and daddy are going to sit you down and talk to you together, and then both of you do the same thing. Mm. Now, let's look at this from another angle in the tailor's mirror of raising children. We give a lot of orders to children.
Yeah.
We do not do that to our friends and loved ones. We don't tell them, wash the dishes. We tell them, would you please put the dish in the dishwasher or in the sink and give it a scrub for me? I'm busy, or such and such and such and such. We use please and thank yous. Mm. There's no reason why we shouldn't use please and thank yous with our children, too.
Yeah.
Children are subject to a barrage of orders like they were military personnel and the parents were drill sergeants. So take a look at yourself and your actions around this little girl. But once again, I say to parents all the time, you have a job to do. That's to be in charge of your children, gently and firmly and kindly, and not to accept highly oppositional or challenging behavior when it comes your way, particularly when they're 6 years of age.
Mm.
Yeah, let's step up to the plate here.
Yeah, but it sounds a bit like a case where she's playing one off against the other.
It's absolutely the case here. That's what we get from this now. Because when daddy asks her and or tells her, she does it. If mom asks, she doesn't. But if daddy appears on the scene, she quickly hustles to do what mom has asked so as to look like the wonderful little child in daddy's eyes. I think, Dad, you better step up here now and soon.
I have been listening to the latest research that it is best not to drink in front of your children. As me and my husband gave up drink a few years ago, this isn't an issue for us. But what is your advice on grandparents and aunts or uncles drinking in front of their children? I ask because we're going to my parents' house for Christmas Day dinner with our 16-month-old. My mum and sister will probably share a bottle of wine at dinner and possibly another one in the evening. Now, I know that at 16 months, my daughter won't be aware that they're drinking alcohol, but I'm looking to set a precedent going forward. Am I being overly cautious? Or would it be better to ask them to leave the wine until after we go home? If I say this to them, they will probably think I am overreacting, that sure, she's only a baba and she doesn't know. But that isn't the point, because then at what age will they decide that they will stop drinking in front of her? If I can say to them that the wise and knowledgeable David Carey says that they shouldn't, then this will give my request more weight. But if you say I'm worrying over nothing, then I can relax in the knowledge that she isn't being inadvertently harmed. So, David, are you going to ruin someone's Christmas?
The wise and knowledgeable David Carey. What a bunch of baloney, you know? I am neither wise nor particularly knowledgeable. Listen, stop worrying. I don't know where you dug up this research that we should drink in front of children. Reasonable social drinking is done all through the Mediterranean countries, and children aren't binging at age 17, 18, or 19 as much as they are here. It's about reasonable, responsible drinking. I see absolutely no reason why the grandparents can't enjoy a glass of wine at dinner time in front of children who are 16 months, 24 months, 6 years of age, or 14 years of age. I just don't see the
What is
rationale.
The research?
Well, we don't know. So I don't know.
I'm not kind of aware. Because, well, you know, probably you can... There's some sort of, you know, you can come up with correlations which aren't necessarily causations.
Correlation does not imply causality. So if you want to send us the research, maybe I'll take a look at it and see if it has any validity or reliability whatsoever. Mm. But look, we read all kinds of things. A year ago, drinking 3 cups of coffee was not good for you. Mm. Last week, drinking 3 cups of coffee a day was good for you. Let's not believe everything we read in the newspapers about research, first of all. And in this case, I think you should let your parents enjoy their holiday season. Falling around drunk in front of children is not a good thing.
Mm.
Getting disinhibited and using bad language or having rows with people because you've drunk a bit too much is not a good thing.
Yes.
But
yeah.
Responsible drinking, having a glass or two of wine or a beer or some such while watching a match on telly, does no harm to anyone in the long run, I don't think. Now, medically, maybe people would disagree with me, but this is my advice. Just live life normally and sensibly.
Yeah.
Don't pressure yourself so much.
Can David please advise me? I'm separated from my two children. I am separated from my children a few years ago. Up until recently, we did well commuting between two separate counties. Last year, I gave my blessing for my estranged family to move to the UK with court obligations. Now I don't hear from my children unless I ring, and I have not seen my 10-year-old son in a year. The problem is I don't know what to do next. I've made every effort to be there for them, but at loss and great pain. What can I do to move forward?
Well, you've let them, you gave consent for them to relocate to the UK with court obligations. I wish I knew what those court obligations are, and you should investigate what those obligations are. In fact, there's very little you can do in a situation like this unless you get some legal advice.
Mm.
It's most regrettable that one partner here is not encouraging the children to have contact with the other partner. I don't have enough context here about what's going on, what's the relationship between the two parents, what was it that motivated one side of the family to relocate to the UK, and most in particular, what are the court obligations, because they must be followed.
Mm.
Now, should they not be followed, you have very little recourse except to seek a solicitor and to go back into court, because a court order has to be followed. So a complaint can be made and the court will follow through. Now, here we have a difficulty because the other family lives in the UK. So the Irish court may not necessarily have immediate access.
Yes.
Or even jurisdiction.
Mm.
I don't know. Only a legal expert can answer that question. So you're in a very hard place. Are you reaching out to the children? Are you trying to contact them? You say you haven't heard from them or seen your 10-year-old son in a year. Why is that? What was the obligation? Typically, when families relocate by mutual consent, the court will stipulate, or the people will go through, what is it called?
Mediation.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Mediation, and agree a visitation plan and an access plan.
Mm.
Why wasn't that done, or was it done? I wish I knew more.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of holes in the details.
There's huge
gaping
holes here. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an awful situation to be in. And even if it happens within the same country, and this is really not uncommon, unfortunately, the courts will order access by the non-custodial parent, which very typically is a Wednesday afternoon and a one overnight on the weekend for children maybe of age 4 or older. And so the other parent may not comply, may make up 1,000 reasons why the child can't be there or just absolutely refuse.
Yeah.
Then all you can do is go back into court. The judge will, of course, say you must obey this court order or you're going to be in trouble, Mr. or Mrs.
Yeah.
And then don't do it again and you go back into court and on and on.
They're saying, I don't hear from my children unless I ring, and I have not seen my 10-year-old son in a year. Now, that's probably not that surprising, given that, you know, you're out of their lives. You have to, you know, you probably have to make more of the efforts.
You have to
keep
make
up
the
that
efforts,
contact.
Yeah. I'm wondering about why he hasn't seen, or he or she hasn't seen the son in a year, though.
Yeah.
That's a little irregular. The phone calls, of course, you make them. You can't really expect 10-year-olds to be ringing you up all the time estranged from them for a year and they live far away and they're starting a new life. You have to make the effort. But I'm concerned about the one-year gap in visitation. Mm. That's not a healthy thing.
Yeah.
For the child or for the parent.
No, indeed, no.
Who now
no.
is in pain and suffering as a result of that. Can you reach out to your partner, your ex-partner, and you know, somehow work something out here? Can you get to the UK by prior arrangement and visit the child?
I have an 11-year-old son who's been flapping and humming since he was 3 years of age. He's a great kid, very active, social, and has lots of friends. He flaps and hums when he is excited and or tense, and it has become more apparent as he has grown. This is mainly because he exhibits this kind of this behaviour when he's playing video games or looking at an exciting movie, but he has been known to do it when he's on the football pitch and not directly involved in the action. I've heard David respond in the past to similar queries, saying to essentially ignore it as it will pass. I suppose the difference is here is that he's been doing it for 8 years. We've never mentioned it to him as we feel it would make him self-conscious and may make it worse. Likewise, we don't want to bring him to the doctor for some reason, hence this letter. For the same reason, hence this letter. We'd like some advice without his being without his involvement or awareness. We are worried that as it hasn't passed for 8 years, it might get worse without intervention. Also that as he enters his teenage years, other kids may begin to tease him about it. Any advice about what we should do?
Well, I have said this numerous times on air. Parents ask, when should I seek advice when I'm concerned about my child's development? The answer, when you are concerned about your child's development, you seek advice. You have now waited 8 years, patiently wondering and watching if this behavior has gone away. Well, it hasn't. It needs some assessment, I'm afraid. And I think you need to contact your GP and you need to have a word with him or her and explain exactly what you are seeing. Please bring a video with you on your phone, because one show is worth 10,000 tells, and let the GP observe. These type of behaviors are quite commonly associated with autism spectrum difficulties, autism spectrum disorder. I'm not saying this child is on the spectrum. I have no idea. I'd like to know more about the child's development. Does it happen in school? Does it happen on the playground? Was the child's speech development within normal expected range or not? There's a lot of missing information, as is often the case in the questions we get. But you've waited too long. Now he's 11 and still flapping his hands. That's going to cause social problems if it's occurring out with his peers in school and whatnot. People are going to wonder. This is an issue where you need to get some more facts yourself about where it's happening and how often. But I would really start talking to GP and see if you need a referral.
Yeah. Okay, we do have more questions for David. We're going to take a break first. Back in a couple of minutes. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. David Coleman is still with us.
No.
David Coleman, my God. I'm so sorry. After all these years.
I'm leaving. Here. I'm out of here now.
Yeah. David Carey is with us. My daughter is very unhappy at school. She's 12. In first year, it says nobody talks to her at school. She's very lonely and utterly miserable at break times. I've talked to the teachers. She won't go to school at all now. Very upset in the morning. And if she goes in, she gets sent home sick. I don't know what to do.
I'm genuinely sorry to hear this. Number one, you've got to get her to school at all costs. School refusal, once it sets in, is enormously difficult to treat. Enormously. And she could really endanger her entire secondary school career. You've got to get back into that school. You need to talk to the year head and or the principal or as soon as possible, and you've got to make a reentry plan. That means someone nice and kind must greet her either at the door or the gate of the schoolyard and escort her into the school, sitting in a quiet place, giving her a little cup of tea or milk or water or whatever it is she drinks and a biscuit, and spend a few quiet minutes with her, helping her know she's wanted and needed and that they're proud to have her in the building and that they're going to do everything possible to make her feel more comfortable. Once you do the handover, you leave. We've said this lots of times. Turn your back, kiss on the head, turn your back, walk away, don't look back. And get the hell out of there as quick as you can, because very often the school refusal is at least being encouraged subtly or not so subtly by parent. Very often. So you've got a high-stakes situation.
Because I
here.
Suppose they see the kid gets very distressed at the thought of going to school.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And now we've got this 12-year-old. We're like 4-6 months into the school year, not even.
Yeah.
And she's already refusing to attend. And you're colluding and letting her refuse. I'm afraid you're going to have to fight the good fight here.
Mm.
And it's not going to be pleasant. But you need allies in school to help you. And you must absolutely talk to the staff members. There's probably a school counselor or someone in pastoral care at that school. Get them on the job immediately. Sooner, the better.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you'll have a pleasant outcome to this. Now, you're running against time here. Christmas holiday is coming up. She'll be out of school for over 2 weeks. It's going to be more difficult to get her back in after the holiday than it is before. So act now, and I mean now, tomorrow morning. Get yourself into that school. Talk to your head. Get a meeting with principal. Talk to the counselor. Special needs coordinator, if necessary. Let's get a plan put in place. The school has a responsibility of care for every child, including those who are vulnerable, sensitive, and distressed and upset about being in school. What's going on in there that she hasn't been able to adjust? Most 12-year-olds, the vast majority, make a smooth, relatively easy transition to secondary school. She hasn't. I'd be concerned about what the factors are that have resulted in this difficulty.
You wonder,
child.
Did she transfer over with kids from the same national school, or is this a completely different secondary school? And it's a much bigger place. It's much bigger and scarier, and can seem more hostile.
Yes, definitely. And those are all mitigating factors. One of the things that isn't done enough by parents and a primary school sixth class teachers and principals and whatnot is smoothing the transition for the most vulnerable children. Everyone visits secondary school of their choice, and they get the orientation, and they're told this is the most wonderful place, and we care for every child here. You know, they're sold a whole pack of promises that they can't always deliver on. But for those children we know who may be a little bit delicate, who may be oversensitive, hypersensitive, we need to do a little bit more. And that has to be done towards the end of sixth class. Well, in this case, that hasn't happened for whatever reasons. She's now upset, won't go to school. You've got to act quick, please. Tomorrow, get in there.
Yeah, yeah.
We're running out of time before the holiday.
Yeah. A nervous dad just texted in to say, quick question for David. We're expecting our first child in the next few weeks. Can you recommend any one book for parenting? I've no experience with kids.
No, I don't recommend any particular parenting books, to be honest. I don't think you need a book. Love your child. Observe your child. Be tender. It's just a little babby that's coming.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need a book for that. Well, back in my generation, it was Dr. Spock. Do you remember Dr. Spock?
Yes, indeed.
Here?
Yeah.
There was a whole bunch of, it actually was a good book about children's development and what to look for and what happens if they're cranky and run a small fever and it's probably they're cutting a tooth.
Yeah.
Happened to me. We brought our our daughter to A&E, and the doctors looked at us like we were total idiots, you know, because she's just cutting a tooth. And,
yeah.
But nonetheless, we did the right thing. Because what have I said before? What do you do when you're concerned about your child? What should you do? Go ask for help when you're concerned about your child. So, no, I'm not going to recommend a book to you.
Yeah.
Don't think you need one yet.
Yeah. Well, in terms of, like, you know, when to feed them and how to, you know, change a nappy and that kind of stuff, I suppose it's kind of... But you figure that stuff out yourself anyway. And if they're crying at that age, they either want food or a cuddle or a nappy change or maybe there's a tooth coming.
Great wisdom generally available from your own parents.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great wisdom about the instrumental facts of child caring. What do you do if they get a nappy rash, et cetera? Well, ask your mammy, or probably not daddy, probably wouldn't know back in that generation, but granny would.
Yeah. Ruth says that you're a breath of fresh air. You're getting a lot of love today. Well, you get a lot of love every time, actually.
I get love. I love love.
Could you pass on to David my enjoyment of your parenting slot every Wednesday? I'm only 23 with no plans to have children anytime soon, but the slot is very enjoyable due to both of your insightful conversation and life advice. We're all big kids, really. Currently studying for final medical exams at Christmas, but David takes precedence.
So No. Wrong.
So, another failed doctor, thanks to David Carey.
No. Well, look, that's a lovely email. And just from reading into the tone of what you're saying, I'm sure you're going to be a very, very compassionate physician. And we need that. We really need that a lot. So good luck to you. Stop listening to me and get studying, please.
Yeah, you lazy sod. David, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming into us. David Carey there. We're going to take a break. After that, the extraordinary life of Elizabeth Friedlander.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering. Recruiting and supporting foster parents and children. Fiverriversfostering.ie.